This is Ryan Dawson with ANC Report, the Anti-Neocon Report, and last week we started a case for demodulation and microwire and stolen secrets, also stolen weaponry, spies, misappropriated money. It's just a mess. It's a massive case. And joining me back on the program today is Dr. Nishio to explain more about this. The previous interview is linked below. I highly recommend listening to that first before jumping in the middle here. And Dr. Nishio, let me ask you first, last interview we were talking about some weaponry that were stolen out of New Jersey and FedEx to somewhere. What was going on there? Exactly what kind of weaponry was stolen? How was that tied to microwire? Who took it and where did they send it?
Good questions, Ryan. And we have some of the answers, but not all of the answers. And let me kind of put it in perspective. Yeah, part of this case involved the theft of two 155 millimeter howitzers off of the U.S. government reservation. It's called Picatinny Arsenal, and it's in New Jersey, Moorhead, New Jersey. And what they do at Picatinny Arsenal is they do research and development on munitions, guns, explosives, that sort of thing. What happened in this case is that we have found evidence that a U.S. Army employee, in fact, he's still working at Picatinny Arsenal, basically organized the theft of two of these howitzer shells so that they could be removed off of the base and worked on at a separate area outside the reservation. Now, the orchestration involved basically taking two weapons that had been shipped to Picatinny Arsenal from Redstone Arsenal, which is a missile defense agency base. They shipped them into Picatinny. They organized with two contractors the removal of the weapons off of the base so that they could work on them. And what's really interesting about this story, Ryan, is the fact that it was meticulously planned. They were told, basically, the contractors who removed the material at the order of the government employee to place the detonators to these weapons in the back seat of the car, underneath the back seat, and to put the weapons themselves in the trunk of the automobile, and to basically how to behave when they drove out the gate so as not to raise the suspicion of the security folks. Now, the weapons, part of the weapons, were inert. In other words, they didn't have the explosives in the body of the weapon. However, the detonators are the thing that make the weapons go boom. They're the initiators, if you will, of the explosion in a howitzer. And what happened in this case is that the detonators themselves were extremely dangerous. So it raises a couple of issues. First of all, golly gee whiz, the shipment of these types of things through, you know, FedEx and regular shipping mail raises a lot of questions, number one, and safety questions. And number two, of course, from the national security perspective, my goodness, if you can remove weaponry and munitions from a government reservation such as Picatinny, it should raise alarm bells because you don't know what the heck can be taken off a site under those circumstances. So a very, very significant security breach, to say the least. Another really important aspect of the situation involves what happened to the weapons. They went to a small research company located off-site, and there's reason to believe that the Israelis may have been involved in this activity and, in fact, testing the modulations microwire technology as part of the detonator system of the weapons. Now, as you know, in many parts of the world, such as in Palestine and other places, one of the big priorities is to find better ways to prevent what's called collateral damage. In other words, to prevent unnecessarily killing innocent people. Now, one of the things that happens in Palestine is, you know, the rockets that are sent back and forth and that sort of thing are generally protected and put in places like hospitals, theaters, schools, in order to actually shield the weapons from attack by the opposing force. So the objective is to find new ways to pinpoint, it's called precision-guided munitions, to really pinpoint the impact of a weapon like a howitzer so that it doesn't do unnecessary damage. It only destroys the target. Now, one of the things that MicroWire allows for is it allows you to do a much, much better job of tracking these munitions in flight. There are many technical things you can do with the MicroWire to allow you to track it directly to its target, which really, really is a significant national security application of MicroWire. And we believe that was actually taking place, that tests were being made in this separate location on the use of MicroWire to improve the performance, the delivery performance of howitzers.
I think I'd argue that the reason for precision guidance is for public relations, not for sympathy of collateral damage. And if you want to take out artillery, you can do it with ground forces instead of shooting missiles at missiles or at rocket launchers.
That is an excellent point. And I think every time we watch the news and we hear about, you know, either a rebel incursion or in the Middle East and involving Israel and Palestine, what you hear are the international cries of outrage when, you know, weapons are directed at civilian populations. And quite frankly, it is appropriate. Military equipment used against civilian populations is never a good thing. And I concur with you, it is a huge public relations problem for certain countries in the world that are attempting to do things and putting the civilian population in the middle.
Yeah, I think so. Well, regardless of the motives, somebody stole these weapons, and it would appear that whoever shipped them off must really involve everybody all the way up to the top, because once you've stolen these things, there's no way a howitzer, much less two, can just go missing. They got to have inventory on all these weapons, and if they're not replaced with a new one, which obviously didn't happen, because if you had one, you wouldn't need to steal one, then once they're gone, everybody knows they were stolen, and the first people to check would be the employees at the base. And so for someone to steal something of that magnitude off a base, they'd have to know that the higher-ups were going to look the other way. It has to involve more than just one thief, because there's no way they could get away with it.
Well, I think the truth in this case is pretty apparent that folks, in fact, did know exactly what was going on. One of the things that the small company Demodulation has done as part of its pursuit of their legal remedies, the civil remedies in this case, is they went back and they asked to depose or subpoena the Army employee who allegedly made the arrangements to steal these weapons off of Picatinny Arsenal. And when they did that, the government refused to accept the subpoena. In other words, they said, no, you can't talk with this guy, which is extraordinary under these circumstances, and which I would have to say would raise the specter, certainly, that the government is totally and fully aware of the activity that took place at Picatinny. I'd also add that in you may remember this from some of the reporting back in the mid-2000s, 2008 actually, a gentleman named Ben Amir Kadish, who was a U.S. Israeli citizen who stole nuclear weapons design information on the F-15 and other materials from Picatinny Arsenal. So Picatinny Arsenal has a long history of basically intelligence and intelligence failures that go way, way back. Now, Ben Amir Kadish is an interesting character because he was handled by the same Israeli handlers who handled Jonathan Pollard, who is the Naval Intelligence Fellow who is currently spending his time in a prison for having violated U.S. national security things and basically spied for Israel on the United States. So Picatinny has a very, very long history of this type of thing that's very, very significant in this case and looking at what's going on there with respect to
the timing
of
Jonathan Pollard is important too, because the timing was in the mid-80s in the midst of Iran-Contra, where a faction within the U.S. was already working with the Israelis before Reagan signed off on it. They found out that had gone back all the way to 1980, and Kadish was spying in 85, Pollard also caught in mid-80. So as they were working together with a faction in the State Department full of Israelis with Kimchi making his alliance with Wolfowitz and McFarland, yet you have this going on where they're stealing nuclear secrets again from the United States. Pollard landed in jail, however, with I guess it's an army base. An army base being caught before, there ought to be a red flag for the same base being caught again, shipping weapons off the base, regardless to who it's to. You just can't steal a weapon of that kind of magnitude and not have major press.
Well, shouldn't be able to. What's very interesting about this case is when it was reported to the federal authorities, the FBI in particular, there was never any investigation done. In fact, the district attorney refused to investigate the case, which is remarkable is the word I'll use. Generally, when you have cases like this off of sensitive government reservations like Picatinny, with a history of these types of things happening, it would be the number one objective, at least based on all my experience, to conduct a very thorough, deep investigation of what's going on, which leaves us really with two conclusions, doesn't it? Either folks aren't doing their job, or B, there's more to it than you know, and it's being basically a lack of transparency in how the government is actually handling the situation, which, of course, leaves me with little confidence that things may or may not be being done right.
Yeah, well, I guess in this case, I would think, why not just sell it to them? Why do they have to work in collusion and steal something when they could just sell it to them anyway? And I guess the reason would be because they've stolen this technology from Demodulation, and they don't want to give them any money or credit for it, so they're trying to hide their activities on their research using the microwire, you know, incorporated in their research. So that must be the reason for the cover of darkness, and it seems just like simple collusion to cover up their crime. But I want to jump away from the base issue. I might come revisit that, but I wanted to ask you too about Demodulation's case and to explain a little bit about what a cooperative research development agreement is, because they entered into one. I don't think a lot of people are familiar with that term. How are they working with Oak Ridge in Tennessee? What was the deal with Demodulation and their CRADA?
Yeah. Well, a cooperative research and development agreement, or CRADA, is really a really special type of procurement contract between the government and a private company. What a CRADA does is allows companies like, in this case, Demodulation, to leverage the investments that we have already made, you and I and all of the other Americans out there have made in scientific knowledge and equipment at places like Sandia National Laboratories, Lawrence Livermore National Laboratories, Los Alamos, and even at places like the Y-12 nuclear weapons plant in Oak Ridge, Tennessee. Now, from last time, we remember that Demodulation entered into an agreement with the Y-12 plant in order to get some help developing their technology, the microwire technology, for commercialization. Now, CRADAs are intended by statute, by law, to do three specific things. They help companies like Demodulation speed up the commercialization of their technology. Second, it gives companies the opportunity to leverage the cutting-edge scientific knowledge and the resources that the taxpayer, again, has already invested in at government and government-contracted sites. Again, places like Sandia, Los Alamos, the Y-12 plant, and the list goes on. And third, and really, really important for the business side of it, it allows for the protection of a company's confidential business information, like things like copyrighted research and trade secrets. That's basically what a CRADA does, Ryan.
So it's a tool designed to help them make their ideas come to fruition and also to help make their product commercialize quicker.
Yeah. And, of course, the idea is that that creates jobs and it creates high-quality jobs. And it spurs innovation, and it keeps the United States ahead of the foreign competition. That's really what Congress envisioned when they passed several laws that allowed us to do this sort of thing in the government.
It seems like venture capitalists and, you know, the normal methods of financing would work. So what's in it for the government, just to help their nation's technologies?
Well, the idea of CRADAs is to allow federal agencies, through their contractors, Martin Marietta, you know, Northrop Grumman, whoever the contractors are, to identify companies with new technologies that are related to the mission of their particular agency. CRADAs require, by law, a quid pro quo of a government use license for any new technology that results from the CRADA. In other words, by accepting help from the government, small companies like Demodulation have to give up the right to use their technology for government purposes, but they are provided what's called a reasonable license fee for that. So it's a quid pro quo.
All right. Well, the purpose of the CRADA is to help the business succeed in the United States. Then why are we making companies like Demodulation give up their rights to market their technologies? It's because that seems detrimental to the whole idea. If they are ripping companies off, then there's no reason to have innovation if you're not going to gain from it.
Yeah, and that's a point of debate. That certainly is a company, the history. There are about 8 laws that allow for this type of technology transfer between the federal government and the private sector. And I guess the bottom line was that they would allow companies to make the determination as to whether or not their cooperation with the government was really worth it. Many people feel that the U.S. taxpayer has already made the investment to pay skilled scientists and engineers at, you know, all of these government installations. And the question is, why make the small business pay twice for the same thing? But what Congress was trying to do is achieve kind of a research and development dividend on their investment. In other words, they were interested in finding a cheaper way to buy the type of technologies necessary to maintain our national security at a cost that is cheaper for the taxpayer. So it was kind of a balancing act, or balancing on a fence here. And they look to market forces to say, okay, is it worth it for a company to really work with one of these places if they have to give up this right to basically sell their own technology back to the government at a higher price.
So yeah, and who determines what's a reasonable license fee? The government?
Oh, Ryan.
There's a hole in that right there.
Yeah, you go, Ryan. And that's the, you know, $10,000 question. What is reasonable and what is not? And, of course, the government has the authority to take it anyway. Under other laws, they can just take it. So the reasonable price on a license is, you know, is kind of a...
Yeah. Well, what went wrong in the case of demodulation specifically then? Were there
a whole bunch went wrong. The government corruption in the case of demodulation actually started long, long before demodulation and DOE's Y-12 plant signed their CRADA to try and commercialize the microwire. You see, what demodulation did not realize at the time they signed the CRADA is that the U.S. intelligence community already clandestinely acquired their microwire technology after the fall of the former Soviet Union. In fact, the U.S. government went to the very same place overseas that demodulation did to acquire the microwire technology. In this case, it was the country of one of our important NATO allies. So in other words, the U.S. intelligence community took the same demodulation microwire technology that the small company lawfully licensed from this country to secretly develop the microwire for themselves. So while demodulation went and followed the law, the international treaties, the international norms, and licensed the technology just the way they should have,
which they had to pay for,
was simultaneously just misappropriating it, clandestinely stealing it. So thus the conflict began a long, long time ago.
Well, wait a minute. Are you saying the U.S. government violated international agreements to respect intellectual property ownership among other countries in the world? Imagine my lack of shock.
Yes, Ryan. Unfortunately, that is exactly what I am saying, and they got caught at.
In other words, tell us the name of the important NATO ally that the U.S. government stole the microwire?
I don't want to do that, and I'll tell you.
Okay.
Our objective here is not to cause unnecessary embarrassment, either for the U.S. government or foreign countries. But one thing I can tell you, and I can assure you, we've notified all of the right people in the U.S. government to encourage them to initiate a dialogue with our NATO ally in this case, to explain to them what happened, to apologize, and to put mechanisms in place to assure that this type of thing never happens again. And that's what we're doing. We are pushing very, very hard behind the scenes here at ICM to get the government to recognize its mistake and to correct it. And that's our objective in all of this, is to make a better system.
The
constitutional rights of the American people.
I'm not guessing at the ally here, but I'm just making a correlation. It's a little bit like when the NSA was tapping Angela Merkel's phone, wouldn't you say?
Yeah, I'm afraid, yes, it is, but maybe even a little worse, Brian. The U.S. government, in this case, violated international norms of conduct by, first, improperly invading the privacy of our NATO allies, just like in the case of the Merkel case. But it went even further. In this case, they actually stole the country's technology. And the significance of that is very great. And it is the type of thing that does not help our international credibility.
I was unaware that we had international credibility.
Well, some people would make that argument, at least lately.
So what else went wrong with the CRADA at the Y-12 nuclear weapons plant?
Well, after
demodulation,
after demodulation, obtained the lawful rights to use the poor microwire patent from this country. They went to work and developed a portfolio of patents for virtually every use you can imagine for the technology, from electronic article surveillance to new sensor technology to something called energy harvesting and many, many other commercial and national defense applications. Based on their patents, they developed actual applications to prove that the technology actually works. This work was done and finished long before demodulation entered into their CRADA with the Y-12 plan. Meanwhile, the U.S. intelligence community was running into trouble, making the microwave technology that they clandestinely obtained work. This is when the U.S. government realized they needed demodulation's trade secrets to optimize the use of the technology. But instead of approaching demodulation with the truth of what had happened, the U.S. intelligence community continued their secret programs to develop the microwire technology through a concerted intelligence collection effort directed at demodulation. In other words, the U.S. intelligence community was directing an intelligence collection activity against U.S. citizens, which, of course, is outside the bounds of what the Patriot Act and other legislation allows these folks to do. So again, we're seeing some very, very serious missteps that drive at the heart of the U.S. Constitution itself.
All right, so you're saying that the Y-12 created was really an attempt to spy on and steal demodulation's trade secrets and not to actually help them commercialize the technology.
That's exactly what's happening here. That's exactly what's happening here, Ryan.
And just to be clear, demodulation is a U.S. company, and the
absolutely
owners are Americans.
U.S. citizens, just like you and I, that have protections, or theoretically have protections under the U.S. Constitution.
So now it involves the intelligence community. So you have the U.S. intelligence community stealing demodulation's trade secrets so that they can work on them secretly, their own programs.
Absolutely.
Okay.
That's what the evidence shows.
What do you see as the implications of what
they're
has
huge,
happened?
They're huge, obviously. Implications are huge, especially when you look at whether or not we're operating under a democracy or some other form of government. First is the nation's credibility. We talked about this in meeting our international obligations with respect to intellectual property and the rights of other nations. In the case of demodulation, the U.S. government itself violated Article 2 of the Constitution, which sets forth that our country is going to follow treaties that we write with other countries. And in this case, involved intellectual property. You know, violations like this turn our promises to the world into nothing but hollow words. So when the Chinese rip off our technology left and right, do we have any credibility when we do this type of thing to tell them that that's not the right thing to do? I don't think so. And I think it damages our credibility immeasurably. Second, if small companies feel that the government is simply going to steal their intellectual property and conceal their actions by classifying what they've really done, then we endanger the very innovation that we, all of us in this country, rely on to stay ahead of the foreign competition and produce high-quality jobs for Americans. Not only that, we hurt our own national security, because without innovation, we will fall militarily behind the rest of the world. So are we engaging in a counterproductive activity becomes the real question. And I think, third, and by far the most important, the actions of the intelligence community, in the case of demodulation, were not an accident. This was intentional. The facts of the case indicate that they were purposely acting to evade the Constitution and the laws of the United States. In addition to the treaty provisions of Article 2, the Intelligence Committee knowingly violated Amendment 4 of the Constitution that speaks to the right of every American to be free from unwarranted government intrusion in their lives. They also violated Amendment 5 that speaks to the right of every American to be fairly recompensed for property seized by the government. And make no mistake, in the case of demodulation, this property was stolen by the U.S. government.
Yeah, you're all Native Americans now. You say you've reported on the situation. To whom?
Well, yes. At ICM, as I mentioned earlier, we felt it was our responsibility to bring the situation to the attention of decision makers in our government responsible for the matters being raised in the case of demodulation. First, we wrote letters, very first, to the Senate Committee on Intelligence and the House Permanent Select Committee on Intelligence. That was our first step.
I just remind people that ICM is the Institute for Complexity Management. So what did they say to you?
Unfortunately, I have to end it right there. Get the full interview in the VIP section under the podcast if you are an ANC member. I will say that it does end on some positive news and a good note on what the judge did and what's about to happen and the direction we are going in. Also, I'm going to be meeting with individuals in the MicroWire case while I'm in New York and Washington, D.C. That's something else that has been added to the agenda, along with lobbying for the 28 pages to get redacted and also covering the anti-APAC conference and a long list of things I'll be doing in Los Angeles as well, so West and East Coast activism. If you don't have ANC membership or you're having trouble logging in, a lot of people who donated on Indiegogo or PayPal were gifted, but you have to use the same email that you used on that. That's the only way we know who you are. So make sure you're using the same one, and we're doing it manually, so it should all be finished in the next 2 days or so. Thank you very much.